For Thursday, the 11th of November, 2021, this is Tabletox Games, episode 218. So this is my second attempt at recording this episode. I spent a good half hour discussing one of my decks, and then when I checked the recording, it seemed I hadn't been recording anything, so that was a real bummer. So the deck that I was getting into was a Gruul deck, which I have been messing around with off and on recently. It's built around the Bard class card, so which costs one red and a green, and the the strategy with that card is to play a bunch of green and red legendary creatures and all of the other legendary cards in those colors, because Bard class will give all legendary creatures +1/+1 counter when they enter the battlefield. And if you level it up to level 2 for one red and a green, legendary spells you cast cost one red and one green less to cast. So you can really, really get a lot of value out of this card. And I initially just threw all the legendary creatures in Gruul into the deck, along with some other legendary planeswalkers and some other cards. And I thought initially that just putting all the Gruul legendary creatures in a deck wouldn't be all that good, because I wasn't expecting them to play to fit so well together, since they're mostly, they use different their different strengths are usually used for different strategies. But I found that for the most part they work really well together. On my previous recording, I went through every single card, reading in them and discussing the strategies that I've been using. But since I've already done that once, I kind of don't feel like doing that again. And well, if you're listening to this, you probably know most of these cards anyway. So, and if you don't, you can always look them up. But so I'll just run through what I have in the deck, and different strategies that I found that work really well. So it's, I've had a good loss win-loss ratio on the deck in general. It's above 50%, even though at the moment it's just above. I think it's at 51, I think, is what I have in total. Or it's actually down to 50 now. It's been working really well. If I go back historically and look at how I've been doing with it, and I just had the unfortunate matchup, I think, several times. So, but anyway, so there, all the creatures are legendary creatures except for Jaspera Sentinel, which I have a couple copies of. Just to help with the ramping in the beginning. And it's the only one drop, so it's nice to be able to do something on turn one. I have that, then it, which works really well together with Magda, which is the first two drop. Unfortunately, it just has one red in the casting cost, so you're not reducing any green there. But in case you're not, you don't have a Bard class on hand on turn two, then playing Magda is a pretty good substitute. So if you have a Jaspera in the play, you can then tap that Magda to have it create a treasure token, even if it's not able to attack on the first turn. Of course, next up is the star of the show, the Bard class. 4 copies of that. Usually you'll want to play that on turn 2. Turn 3, you want to immediately level it up for the 2 mana that you had. Play a third mana and then probably play either a Magda if you have that for the 1 mana. Also a Targnar, Demon Fang Gnoll, which is one of those cards that you pretty much never see otherwise, besides in this deck. Costs 1 red and a green, so if you powered up your Bard class, then it's going to be free. And it's a legendary creature Gnoll for 2/2, and it has pack tactics. So whenever Targnar, Demon Fang Gnoll attacks, if you attack with creatures with total power 6 or greater, this combat, attacking creatures get +1/+0 until end of turn. So, a little bonus there. This is just an uncommon, so it's one of the few non-rare or mythics in the deck. It also has the ability to, for 2 and the red and the green, you can double Targnar's power and toughness until end of turn. This really comes in handy, and I've had a couple wins where what tends to happen with this deck is, since you're playing so many legendary creatures, a lot of text, and several of them don't see all that much play. I think many times opponents don't bother reading them properly and keeping track of which card does what and so on. So I've taken several opponents by surprise, or it seems that way anyway, because they'll block the bigger creatures and not block Targnar. But then if I have a bunch of mana on hand, I can double it, and I've even once quadrupled its power toughness, and that has been enough to take home the win. So remember, all the legendary creatures are going to get a +1/+1 counter when you put them into play if you have the Bard class in play. So at least Targnar will come in as a 3/3, a free 3/3, and then you can double it to 6/6 and then quadruple it up to 12/12, which is well, pretty nice. So that's that card. Next up, I have 3 copies of Issika, God of the Tree. This also has a really nice synergy because it gives all other legendary creatures that you control vigilance and the ability to tap them for 1 mana of any color. So it really helps with the ramping, and of course playing the reverse side, the Prismatic Bridge of Issika, God of the Tree, which will get you even more cards into play every turn. Or permanent into play. But yeah, and of course you can use that mana to power up the Targnar as well, or any other ability. Next up, I have a couple of copies of Svella, Ice Shaper, another one of those legendary creatures that you don't see all that much play. It's the only other uncommon besides the Targnar. This is from Kaldheim. So Svella, Ice Shaper costs 1, a red, and a green. So you'll pay just 1 if you had the Bard class leveled up. You can tap it to create a colorless snow artifact token named Icy Manolith with add 1 mana of any color. I've never used this ability in this deck, I think. Or if I have, it's just because I had nothing else to do, but I really didn't need it. Because usually you'll be using up all your mana to just pump out creatures and do other things. And you really don't need to be doing this. You can also pay six and a red and a green and look at the top four cards of your library. You can cast a spell from among them without paying its mana cost and put the rest at the bottom of your library in a random order. I've used this a couple of times with varying degrees of success. It's really expensive. Probably you're paying more than whatever you draw is going to be, but at least you can kind of rifle through the top cards and get whatever you need. Usually, if you have this much mana, you don't need more land. So, and you're doing this when you don't have to hold up mana for anything else. So you can pick whatever you need for your next turn, usually. This would be a good thing to do on the end step of the opponent's turn, but usually you won't have this much mana laying around at that point. Next up, Tovalar, Dire Overlord, three copies of that. I wasn't sure if I was going to play this at first because it has that ability that it when a wolf or werewolf you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. And I thought, well, this isn't the werewolf or wolf deck, but actually, besides Tovalar, I also have Arlen, the Pack Hope, which fits in since it's also red and green. So it's reduced to just two generic mana to play it. And it also can produce wolves. So fits really well with Tovalar, of course. They're both from Innistrad Midnight Hunt, so that's reasonable. But it's not uncommon that you have both of those in play, so they work well together. I have a single copy of Delina, Wild Mage. I haven't really decided if this is a good card, a good fit in this deck or not, because it's usually just died when I've played it. It's just a 3-2. Of course, it comes in as a 4-3 if you have the Bard Tale or Bard Tale, Bard class in play. But still, it dies fairly easily. But it has a nice ability to be able to get copies, and they don't become legendary of creatures that you have. So works really well in this type of deck. Next up, I have two copies of Kolvori, God of Kinship. So another legendary creature god, 2/4 for two and green. So this doesn't fit in as well, quite as well as others, since it doesn't have any red, so and it's double green, so you still have to pay one green. But still, pretty nice. On the reverse side, it's an artifact ring, which I can't see it here on this tool, but it allows you to tap it for a green mana that can be used either to cast a legendary creature, which fits really well in this deck, or a named creature type. So the only creature that I have in the deck that isn't a legendary is the Despair Sentinel, and so I always name Elf. Of course, I could name Rogue as well, but I don't want to talk about Rogues if I don't have to. So yeah, this card gets, it's a 2/4, but it gets +4/+2, becoming a 6/6 if you have three or more legendary creatures. So just a couple more, and you have a really big body here. Also, you can pay one and a green, tap it to look at the top six cards of your library. You may reveal a legendary creature card from among them and put it into your hand, put the rest at the bottom of your library in random order. So much cheaper way to get a card into your hand. Of course, you're not playing it immediately, but still, it will probably be a better deal than the Svela option. I have another, or the next card is just of a single copy, is Sereth, the Viper's Fang. Another card for two and green. And this legendary creature is a 3/4. It has the text, other tapped creatures you control have Death Touch, and other untapped creatures you control have Hexproof. And you can pay one and untap, or tap it to untap another target creature or land you control. So a really nice way to protect your other creatures, and you can also, the Death Touch can be really helpful, even though your bodies are going to be pretty big. Against mono green and other decks with big creatures, it's nice to have Death Touch. I've here as well. I'm surprised, or yeah, I think surprised. You don't know, but I guess it seems like I've surprised the opponent. Since if you have this with Azika in play, the creatures or your creatures won't tap as you attack since they'll have vigilance, so they're hexproofed. But then if they're blocked by a bigger body, you can tap them for mana with the ability from Azika, and that will change the hexproof to Death Touch. So you can really surprise your opponent by taking out a blocker that they thought would survive, and it won't. So yeah, another nice addition. Although it also tends to die pretty quickly, since it'll be the only creature that doesn't have hexproof, usually. So next up, Arlin. I already mentioned great planeswalker for this deck, which doesn't get any +2. Or +1/+1 counters, but it can create wolves, and also it has the ability that for +1, it reads until your next turn, you may cast creature spells as though they had flash, and each creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. So you can add yet another counter to your creatures, and you can also flash them in. So I keep forgetting to flash in creatures, which I should when I have this in play. I'm always too eager, and I play them during my turn instead. But this is a really nice ability. On the flip side, since this has Daybound, when it becomes night, you can pay to have Arlen become a 5/5 werewolf. And that can also be really, really helpful. Then I have two copies of Renin 7. I won't go into what that does. Everybody knows by now. Fits fairly well into the deck. Two Inferno of the Star Mounts. This tends to be a game ender. When I get this into play, sometimes the opponent will just scoop, or you fly in with the haste and just kill them. Quite often, this will come in as a minimum of 7/7. If you have the bard class in play with Arlen, it comes in as an 8/8, and you pump it as well with whatever red mana you have left over. And quite often a game ender. And if you have a Seek in play, then it has vigilance as well, so it can both attack and block. So, yeah, pretty scary. A single Vorinclex in here, which is really nice when you have the planeswalkers in play. Also, that will double the +1/+1 counters, so you can get some really, really big creatures. Next up is as I was mentioning, how. Several of these cards, I was surprised how well they work together. I wasn't expecting it. Because next up is the final legendary creature in here, which is Phylath, World Sculptor. So that's a cost 4 and a red and a green. It's the legendary creature Elemental for 5/5. And when Phylath, World Sculptor, enters the battlefield, create a 0/1 green plant creature token for each basic land you control. And it has landfall, so whenever land enters the battlefield under your control, put 4 plus 1 counters on target plant you control. So I've had this happen once or twice that I have Vorinclex in play Phylath, or, well, I could possibly have Phylath already in play, but when I play the land, instead of getting the 4 plus 1 counters, you get 8 plus 1 counters on the plant. So you get a nice 8/9 creature. So yeah, that can also go, you can go crazy with all that. To finish the deck off, I have the lands. I have 4 Crag Crown Pathways, 8 mountains, 6 forests, 2 Lair of the Hydra, and 4 Rockfall Vale. Yeah, so the whole idea of the deck is to just get a ton of value out of your cards. You're playing them cheaper and they're coming out in bigger, so you can spend additional mana on their activated abilities and so on. And usually you just take over the game. What you do have to worry about is the third level of the Bard class, because when you pay 3 and a red and a green, it reads, whenever you cast a legendary spell, exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play them this turn. So that can be kind of a song creation type of effect where you're just playing things more or less for free or really cheaply, and you're every time you play a legendary spell, you're drawing 2 more or putting 2 more into exile. So you'll have a ton of cards in there, usually a bunch of lands. At that point, you probably don't need all that much land, so it's a way of kind of filtering out lands as well. Unfortunately, whatever you can't play will be left in exile and you can't play it later on. But at that point, you can probably finish out the game. You just have to make sure not to play out your entire deck because you need some cards left for any future turns that you need to take to really win. But yeah. It's a lot of fun to play this deck. As I said, I'm now at 50-50 win rate, but I've been pretty high on it. It's never gone under, I think. So it's been doing well for me, but I'm at the moment kind of stuck in platinum, jumping around between tiers 3 and 2. Can't quite get into diamond at the moment. We'll see how that goes. So I finally caved and decided to try to push into diamond, as I was saying. The idea was to try to do it before Crimson Vow was released, but that's not going to happen now. It's pretty much releasing as we speak. Just not at the computer, so I can't play it now. But I wanted to try to grind into Diamond at least before switching back into Limited mode, which I plan to do as the new set comes out. Play a lot of Limited, but yeah, I caved and put together a mono white deck. Looking at the top placing decks and picked the one that had the best win loss ratio. I didn't have all the cards, so I used a couple of rares and a couple of mythics to try to get there, but still a few that aren't in here, and that might explain why my stats aren't as good. So I'm still missing a couple of Brutal Cathars, which I would like to have in this deck. They would be really nice, but I'll have to do without them, it seems. But this deck has been working fairly well for me. I pushed back from gold into platinum with it. And I've been having a fair amount of success. But now it's just plateaued at platinum 2, I think. I'm back down to just 50% win rate. I have a 33 to 33 stats, I think, if this is up to date. And the problem is really the gruel. I can tell here by the stats. Of course, I don't know if this is good enough. Mono green. I have 18% win rate there, 2 to 9. That's the main problem. Gruul, I have 1 to 2, so 33%. I have 60% against mono white, 60% against is it six 86% against Dimir, 60% against mono black, 60 against Orzhov, 67 against Rakdos, 100% against Simic. Lost two games to Sultai. Don't remember what type of deck that was exactly, but I think it had a lot of counters. 100% against is it Azorius? I don't remember the white blue. And there's a bunch of different combinations that I haven't played, but it's fairly fun to play. Pretty straightforward. The game's really quick, just a few minutes each game, so that's a good thing. I don't know if I'm gonna continue on with this deck since at the moment I'm not doing very well, or I mean I'm down to 50-50, so it's not really getting me anywhere. But just felt like I needed to what's the word? admit that I'd gotten into this. But not much to say there. It's a pretty straightforward just mono white aggro deck, but all the usual trimmings, Brutal Cathars, your a couple of portable holes, Stonebinders, Familiar, Usher of the Fallen, Intrepid Adversary, Luminarch Aspirant, Sungold Sentinel, Adeline, Resplendent Cathar, Elite Spellbinder, Redain, Skyclave Apparition, Legion Angel, and Snowlands and Faceless Haven. So, I think that's. I don't have much else to say on that. Well, besides the Gruul and the mono white decks, I've been dipping a bit more back into historic, trying to see if my decks there can be of any help to push back up into diamond and beyond. Mostly Eldest Reborn, which continues to be pretty stable. I'm just at 51% win rate, but I've been doing fairly well today. Did a fair amount of wins, but my Arclight deck has just been gone to shit. It's at 38% win. I guess I just continue trying it, but it's really not doing it for me. Don't know what happened there. It was doing so well. And I don't feel like I'm seeing that all that much different type of opponents. I thought it might be because I put in a Smoldering Egg. I don't know. Didn't feel like that was the issue because I wasn't even drawing the Smoldering Eggs, so it doesn't feel like having them in the deck was the problem. But I guess maybe I did sometime. So I've tried if I go back and look at my deck history, I added the first Smoldering Egg I had, then I added the second one. I removed a Flame Channeler the first time, which I never had do anything good for me. Second time, I removed Expressive Iteration, which might have been a mistake. Third one, I removed the Stormwing Entity, which also has been pretty good in this deck, so maybe also not that good. And the fourth one, I also replaced the Stormwing Entity, so might have been kind of the issue. Then I tried to change it up a bit by putting in a Stern Dismissal and a Depart the Realm and removing a Consider and a Lightning Axe, because I was meeting these irritating white decks where they play the 9 lives and whatever that other enchantment is that prevents counters to be put on things, so that really messes up the pixie, what's it called? The little dragon, pixie dragon, or sprite dragon, messes that up considerably, and also you just can't win. And I didn't have any removal of enchantments, so I tried putting those in there. Of course, I'm just bouncing them, so it doesn't really help with the issue. So then I started removing the Smoldering Eggs, replaced them with another Stern Dismissal, Depart Realm, and 2 Tested Talents. But I don't think I even drew those. And if I did, really didn't help. I think I drew the Tested Talents when I was playing like another aggro deck without any instances of sorcery, so really didn't help. So at the moment, this deck is it's not really functioning. I think I'm gonna, I don't know what I'm gonna do, but it's kind of, I'll have to put it aside for now. We'll see if I go back to it and clean it up at some point. So the deck that, like I said, has been working fairly well is the Eldest Reborn deck, which had a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to play. I had a real fun matchup today against a Genesis Ultimatum type of similar type of deck. I've made something similar before, so it's also playing with Ugins and Ultimatums and so forth. So it was a ramp deck, but it worked really well since I had. Or since I have Siphon Insight, I was able to siphon a Genesis Ultimatum. Really nice to be able to play a Genesis Ultimatum for 7 generic mana. And it was, since I have Forsaken Monument in play, quite often hardly puts a dent in my mana use, so I could play that as well as play Golos, Tireless Pilgrim. I mean, use the ability, active ability. So yeah, we had a lot of fun. It was or I had a lot of fun anyway. It seemed like as the opponent was having fun, they didn't quit. So our Ugins were battling back and forth, doing damage to each other, and we're just cleaning out each other's other creatures that were put on the battlefield. Then at some point, I played my Sanathar Guild Kingpin, and they scooped. They realized that this is not going their way. So. Yeah, lots of fun with this deck. Like I said, just a 51% at the moment. And it has a hard time against mono green, especially, I mean, in historic it's going to be elves mostly and other decks that are heavy aggro decks. Mono red is also a big problem, and mono black as well. Yeah, a Gruul. I've had 3 matches against Gruul, never won those. And also Boros is, of course, an issue. But yeah, lots of fun to play this deck anyway. So, but now I'm gonna shut this down. Need to go walk the dogs, and looking forward to looking at Crimson Vow. later on. So, bye-bye.